gosh, I hope that sounds better than it sounded for the first 2 hours. Oh, my
Welcome
God.
Welcome back, John.
Oh, my God. I ran down to Radio Shack, and I got myself the battery. All right. Diving into the news!
At least you weren't for 2.5 weeks.
My mom went into a Radio Shack once with me, and all I wanted was an AM-FM clock radio in the shape of a teddy bear. I thought it would be Nirvana. I would need nothing other than this teddy bear that was an actual AM radio. And they wanted to take a picture of my mother. They wrote down her driver's license. She wanted to write a check, and she said, oh, screw it. And she took the teddy bear, slammed it down on the table, and we walked out. And I remember looking back through the door of the Radio Shack there in Radnor, Pennsylvania, like, but Mom, my bear, my AM clock radio bear. So the last time I went into anything technical, that was it. So here we are. We're back up. So let's see.
Just
Rights was
battery.
At MyNorthWest.com. What? Yeah, just
you know, you're spending all your time stacking wood. You ought to stack a few batteries in the corner of that cabin of yours.
I had to run for emergency to find a battery around here. All right. Getting to the fact that the city of Seattle is always coming up with interesting ideas in order to be able to see alcohol and drug problems as a sickness, as an illness that needs to be treated that way, as opposed to a crime. This would be the ultimate. Just sort of throw all the cards in and just simply say, if you are addicted to drugs and you commit a crime, you are not going to be held responsible for the crime that you committed because the illness, the addiction itself, is the main problem. So Como News did the story. What city council member has come up with this brilliant idea, Tom?
It's Lisa Herbold. And we should let Como tell the story, but I think we're overstating it, and we now.
Right. Well, we are doing talk radio.
Herbold.
Here we go.
That's right. We're allowed.
Scott Lindsay, the former public safety advisor to the city of Seattle, says he's never seen anything like it.
I am not aware of any legislation like this anywhere in the United States, even globally. All cities have criminal codes to protect their citizens from criminal acts. This would basically create a legal loophole that swallowed all those codes and said, green light to crime.
The legislation was proposed by Seattle City Council member Lisa Herbold last Wednesday.
This proposal is sponsored by Council member Herbold. It is to consider passage of legislation that would allow the dismissal of crimes of poverty. And it would do so by revising the definition of duress as a defense against prosecution.
It would excuse and dismiss, in essence, effectively legalize almost all misdemeanor crimes committed in Seattle by people who show either symptoms of addiction with no medical diagnosis necessary, symptoms of a mental disorder, or poverty, that they committed the offense to meet an immediate basic need. In other words, if someone stole merchandise to sell for cash to get food, clothes, rent money, whatever, they could not be convicted.
If you don't feel very protected right now, this would wipe out almost all remaining protections that we have.
What kind of crimes are we talking about? Basically, anything under a felony and excluding DUI and domestic violence would, by law, not be prosecuted.
This would absolutely open the floodgates to crime in Seattle, even worse than we often currently struggle with. It's a basically blank check to anybody committing theft, assault, harassment, trespass to continue without disruption from our criminal justice system.
Hmm.
Okay.
So if you have the need for it, if you have the need, you're hungry, it's okay to steal the bread.
Well, I mean, yeah, to go back to Victor Hugo, I wrote down as I was reading this, this is Valjean in Les Mis.
Let me tell you, every time a story like this comes up, I'm waiting for you to sing something from Les Mis.
Yeah.
But the idea being is that you, if you're really hungry and you have to eat, you have to eat, so it's okay to steal the bread.
Yes. Now, that is how Scott Lindsay is pitching it. That's how in Como, which is based on Scott Lindsay's reading of this, is pitching it. We hadn't heard from Lisa Herbold, but thanks to Hannah, our intrepid reporter, we have. And I'm just going to read you, it's a long thing, but I'm just going to read you two key little paragraphs about this. because it's overstated in that report. According to, this is Lisa Herbold, who introduced the legislation. The goal of this legislation is to authorize judges to consider a duress or de minimis defense. The legislation does not provide, quote, blanket immunity for most misdemeanors. That's from the story. The legislation does not, quote, provide an absolute defense. This legislation does give the court and our judges the ability to dismiss a prosecution if they find the defendant's conduct meets specific circumstances, a nexus between the crime committed and the circumstances the individual is in. It does not require it. This is an important distinction which gives additional authority to our judges to address complex issues. She goes on and all about other stuff that we didn't play, so we don't have to give her explanation for it. Somehow they were like sneaking it through the back door, just the opposite, according to Lisa Herbold. But anyway, that's the basic thing. So I still think we can talk about the context of this legislation, which she points out, this is just an idea. We haven't even come up with any legislation. We're just thinking about it. Here's something to, work it in so that we end up a bit like the diversion programs that have been advocated that Hannah was talking about in the 3 o'clock hour, I think, that there may be other ways to handle this. So anyway, that's it. So now we can discuss.
I sent the story to Jacob that 50% of all misdemeanors are not even tried in the city of Seattle. To begin with, I guess they're just giving one more option for judges to, if the person stands before them and says, I'm addicted to this and this and this and this, I broke into the person's car and stole all their stuff, and then I took the money and I bought drugs with it. And then at that point, the judge would go, well, it sounds like you have a drug problem. Mm-hmm. Have you considered one of our drug programs? Oh, okay. Why don't we do this? You go sign up and do a drug program, and then therefore we won't charge you with anything. And the person says, okay, and they walk out the door. They never show up, and then there is a bench warrant or there isn't one, and then they go around and continue to steal stuff. So the question is one more way for the judge, to deal with the person's illness as opposed to the person's crime?
Yeah, I mean, I could go back and read more from Herbold's letter, but I don't know that we need that. You want more?
No. I get what she's saying. She's
okay. Just, oh, good. Okay.
They feel as if these misdemeanors, and it's a way of also sort of saying, look, these people are really in dire straits, and with all this income inequality and all these horrible things, really, it's not their fault that they're stealing. Because they really have a true need. So they need to steal stuff. They need to knock you over the head and take your wallet because they need that money desperately.
Well,
be a misdemeanor, though.
Well, the thing is, in this particular case, and that doesn't deal with DUIs and all these kinds of stuff. I mean, we always, our justice system is based on mitigating circumstances. You're actually asked, to present any mitigating circumstances when it comes to sentencing. And so this is just a version of that. Now, I'm not saying that especially the conservatives that are outraged by it, but anybody who's outraged by it, they're, law and order people, don't have reason to think, oh, we're already too soft on crime because of these diversion programs and all. That's fine. It's just not quite I think it was Scott Lindsay who was quoted in the piece saying that, that never in the history of Western civilization has anyone gone this far kind of thing practically. And it sounds like it's not nearly quite that.
Yeah, I look to see other places that have similar laws. So Proposition 47 in San Francisco was passed in 2015 because what they found was three strikes, you're out. People were getting caught shoplifting, and then three strikes being the shoplifting, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, you're going to prison because their third strike was shoplifting or some other misdemeanor.
Yeah.
So 47 came along and said, I'll tell you what, if you steal anything under $1,000, you don't have to go to jail. We won't consider that to be your third strike. It really is something we'll just sort of look the other way on. So what has happened is that people go in and know
and
exactly how much to steal.
$999.
Right. There's a Walgreens Inside Edition, which I didn't even know was still on the air, was in there doing a story on shoplifting in San Francisco. And while they were doing a story, a guy jumped over the counter, walked over, picked up an air mattress, got on his scooter, and walked out the door. And other people came in and just ransacked the place. Not like looting, and the people that own or run the store at Walgreens were just watching them just steal stuff and then just walk out the door. So I think in Seattle, most of the people, the crime isn't that, there's not that much crime. There is crime. People just don't report it anymore because it's not even worth reporting it. I mean, do you feel that the person who has all sorts of extenuating circumstances, society should look the other way while they break the law?
Now, I don't know what you mean by looking the other way. I am all for intervention. The question is, how hard do we come down on the people that are breaking the law? And are, by coming down hard on them, are we just, in effect, creating a situation where they'll have to break more laws? That they'll end up, that's the issue. And I don't think, I'm in no kind of radical stance toward that. We all understand that that maybe there'll always be crime and there'll always be criminals, but if we can at least establish a basic, you know, level of needs met, the basic needs, maybe there wouldn't be as much crime for circumstances. And that's right. That's a really squishy notion. I do think, will people do bad things? Will somebody who's perfectly well off, I mean, we often hear about, you know, these kids that grow up in very nice homes, they have nice families, they've got plenty of money and stuff, and they still, you know, get into, criminal stuff because they want more. And so it's not right. Like if you only provide, you know, the basic necessities, then no one will commit crimes. I'm not that naive, but I do think that at that bottom rung of society, if we could make their lives less dependent on, those kind of, you know, criminal activities just to stay afloat, we'd be better off as a society. But no, I have no problem with having some jails, and there are criminals. And if we have the law, you break the law, you pay the price.
I think we make it a really nice place to be a criminal. I don't know if I told you this story. Out with doing a ride along, they get this guy. He's 22 years old. They Narcan him to bring him back up again. And we stood there and talked to him. And he told me, I think I told you this, he had his wisdom teeth out. He lived in Boise. He got addicted to Oxy. He was able to get Oxy, only some of it, for a while in Boise. And then he kind of ran out of sources because his dealer got arrested. So he got on a bus and came to Seattle. And the reason he's come to Seattle is because it's so easy to get high. He has been homeless and robbing for 2 years, living in the streets and other places like that in Seattle, feeding his addiction. Tragic, tragic story that I think is repeated thousands of times over. The reason he came here is because this was the easiest place to get that drug. Now, he doesn't have the source in Boise, but he has it here. So he lives because of his wisdom teeth being taken out, his addiction, and now here he lives on the streets of Seattle, stealing and robbing in order to feed the habit.
Yes. And
how would you fix that problem? How would you fix that problem, Tom? What would you do? What piece, like a Django set, what would you remove or what would you put in place to stop that?
Well, I would try to deal with his drug addiction. Unless he is
him. Not him. The bigger picture.
Okay, I don't know. What's the bigger picture? Not having anyone's wisdom teeth ever taken out. What do you mean? Pain pills. You cannot control somebody's addiction to something.
No.
It's an innate.
It's a source.
Human
it's
tendency.
A source. Why did he come to Seattle?
Because they should have not arrested his drug dealer in Idaho. Is that what you're suggesting?
No, I'm suggesting is he comes to Seattle because Seattle is easy. This is where you go if you want drugs. Come to Seattle.
Okay. Yes.
And that's why our homeless grows, and that's why crime is increasing, because they don't do anything to stop the idea of people selling the drugs and people shooting the drugs. If you want to attract people that want to get high, basically make it easy, as we have here in Seattle.
Well, if he hadn't got addicted in the first place. And the Purdue family has something to do with that, with the OxyContin stuff. That also, that would have happened at even farther upriver. Now, the question is, I mean, drugs are illegal, but are they the greatest sin? And then that's what you, I mean, so what is your solution then? Would you, anybody who sells drugs should be locked away for life? I don't know. I mean, the thing is, these are just tricky, complex issues. The people that are selling the drugs are probably in need of drugs, too. They're not the kingpins who are sitting on a pile of money. They're just the street urchin types that are just making a living.
Right. So we could do what Portugal did, which is basically you legalize them all and then provide the treatment for it. And then you don't have to steal. So then you say, well, what does it cost for a society to have to get the person, arrest the person, all that stuff that goes into it? And then what does it cost the insurance companies and then the individual that has the stuff stolen out of the car? So then you simply say, well, that number is X. So what we're going to do is we're going to spend X minus 20 or whatever the number would be in order to be able to provide drugs to these people and whatever you want to do to sort of stop them from stealing. So in effect, they are breaking the law, threatening to break the law. So then we will create sort of a bypass around the law so that we can feed them their drugs so they can stay high so they don't steal from us.
Yeah. And the only thing I don't like about that scenario is you give up on the person. Like, I do not think that a person is fulfilled if all they are, I mean, we're allowing them to be a full-on drug addict, but that's not a full life. There are some that may be beyond the pale that, you know, we can't rescue. But, yeah, I would not want to just turn that over. Although things have worked really well in Portugal. I went to Portugal for the first time a couple of years ago, and I had a long talk with a taxi driver who was very animated about this. And he said, yeah, he had all sorts of gripes about life in Portugal, but that wasn't one of them. He says, that's the only good thing Portugal's ever done. He thinks it's fantastic, so...
Yeah, they have programs there, and they basically give you the drugs in the morning, and they give it to you in the afternoon, so you just don't steal from your neighbor.
Yeah, yeah. But as a result, I mean, would you be okay with that? You're okay with legalizing some?
We're heading that way now. We're heading that way now. Yeah. We just don't provide the drugs like they do in Vancouver. But if you go up to Vancouver and you see the safe injection sites and you see the human waste, and I'm not talking about excrement, I'm talking about the wasted lives. Laying about, selling whatever they need to sell in order to continue to keep that drug going through their veins. It's sad. Yeah. We're heading that way in Seattle. We're close to not enforcing the law, and that's why the homeless problem is so high, and that's why the crime rate is so high. They're coming for the drugs.
It's one of them, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Tracy Taylor, say something positive.
You both are absolutely wonderful human beings.
he didn't say lie.
Yeah, really. All righty, like watching Windows and Doors, reminding you, make sure you get a battery if you're doing a remote show. Oh, no. They're reminding you to take care of those windows and doors in your house. And, you got a cracked seal in the window, and it's a double pane, but there's moisture in between. That's a problem. You don't have to be a detective to figure out that that's going to be a problem for you. Let's replace those windows and doors. Let's save heat and electricity and money as well. And especially, it all comes back to you when you go to sell that house. You'll get it back. The realtor will say, and those are brand new windows and doors from Lake Washington Windows and Doors. That's money in the bank. All right, Tom, two quick COVID stories. The first one seems like something from a Hallmark movie that it's like, look, I've got this idea. How are we going to cheer up people's spirits at the same time? How are we going to let everybody know? Let me ask you this. Who is the most trustworthy person we could possibly think of? I don't know. Santa Claus? Brilliant. Exactly. All right, Phillips, let's get every single Santa Claus, and we'll do all sorts of commercials. I'll get $250 million from the government, and we'll do radio, podcast, television, and we'll have Santa Claus say to everybody, hey, guess what I'm bringing you for Christmas? I'm bringing you a vaccine, and you can trust me because I'm Santa Claus. I break into your house once a year and leave presents, so trust me. And that's the idea that was sold to a bunch of Santa Clauses, and what would they get in return, Tom?
They would get first access to the vaccine.
Brilliant, Phillips. Exactly. So, Santa Claus says, are you with me? And they're like, we're with you. And then with that, the guy said, Trump is going to love this idea. Doesn't this sound like a Hallmark movie commercial? Yeah. I mean, doesn't it sound like a... Right.
Exactly.
Okay. Yeah.
So what finally happened to the great idea?
So what happened is the guy who suggested it, a guy named Michael Caputo, he was like an undersecretary of Health and Human Services, HHS. It was his brainchild. And he got in a little hot water about a month or so ago. He started spouting these kind of right-wing conspiracy ideas and then accused the doctors and the CDC under his department of sedition and all that. And so he decided that he was going to take a 60-day medical leave and not come back at least until, you know, like a month after the election. And at this point, this story is percolating, unbeknownst, supposedly, to the HH secretary, Mr. Azar. He says, this is the first I've heard of this. This is ridiculous. I'm not going there. Why would he do this? Why would he be anti-Santa? Well, at least one of the actors that they had contacted to help do something along this line, along these lines, Dennis Quaid, said that he was made uncomfortable, he says, because people thought that it looked like he was endorsing Trump's approach to the vaccine or something, that it was because, after all, the vaccine probably wouldn't be ready in time for Christmas. Were they somehow, cashing in, and was it too political? And so he says, I don't really feel that comfortable doing this. And at that point, my guess is, John, that the HH secretary says, this is not worth it. This wasn't my idea. I had never even been told about this. Let's just drop the whole damn thing. That's the last thing we need is another political controversy involving Santa.
So
personally,
it's not a bad idea.
I know. I kind of feel the same way.
Offering them vaccines ahead of time, I guess it probably fits. They're overweight. They're over 60.
No.
So they'd be like, yeah, I need it bad, right?
Yeah.
So
especially if someone's going to come sit in my lap. But the problem is, I don't think anyone is going to be sitting in their lap, so then it's sort of premature. I also wonder I assume that anti-vaxxers believe in Santa Claus, too. I wonder if they would feel like somehow Santa Claus is being co-opted by the PSAs, the public service announcements.
Way it went. How did somebody find out about this? Did somebody come forward to Santa Claus and complain that it didn't all flesh out?
Well, no. I mean, I think the only high profile aspect was when Quaid kind of withdrew from the assignment. Beyond that, I'm not quite sure. Except that who's disappointed are all the Santa Clauses. They all thought they were going to get early access to the vaccine, so they're disappointed. The problem is that if we can believe the Secretary Azar, that he wasn't informed, one of the problems is when one of your underlings does something that might be controversial, you'd probably like to be clued in on it. And if he hadn't, and I don't know that he's maybe just covering, for himself by saying I didn't know about it, but it hadn't been cleared through the highest channels. But the guy who was in charge of that, Caputo guy, he was really excited and thought Trump would love it. We don't know if Trump was ever informed of this or not.
Right. Plus, anything that guy touched, people are like, oh, my God, get away from it. Whose idea
was that? I know. That's what I think is really, it's really the politics behind the guy who had the brainchild.
Super embarrassing. The folks in Scotland have said that they would like to have a ceasefire. This is going back to the idea after World War One, the Germans and the British laid down their weapons, and on Christmas Day, they came up out of their muddy trenches. They met right there in no man's land. They exchanged cigarettes. They sang Christmas carols, cakes, or anything that was available as a sweet. And it would lasted about an hour and a half. It was that both sides said that just for this day, for this moment, we won't be trying to kill one another. We'll celebrate Christmas, the birth of Christ. And then after it was over, they went back over to their sides and again continued to shoot and kill one another. But for a brief time, there was peace there in no man's land between the two muddy, frozen trenches between the UK, the British, and the German. So what did they ask for in Scotland?
The same kind of thing. So Scotland, again, I haven't checked most recently how hard Scotland was hit, but they're still under a kind of a lockdown, and they're discouraging all these big gatherings. And so somebody from the Church of Scotland asked if there could be like a one-day dispensation, what they call a one-day ceasefire, where families could be allowed to all get together. And, we'd go back to being good Scotsmen and women the day after. And there, I mean, it's just been a plea because Christmas is so family oriented for so many people. And so far the government hasn't agreed. The problem with the comparison to World War One is that's the way you get it. It would be like having your World War One ceasefire, but you're somehow secretly planting bombs in the other side's trenches. So when they went back, they'd blow up because the fear is, yeah, you give one day and all the families of Scotland get together and they pass the COVID-19 disease. It'll have ruined all these weeks and months of trying to stay safe. Yeah. So there hasn't been any government movement on that part. But at least the church that requested it.
I always sound like a broken record on this stuff. So yeah. I looked up to see deaths in the UK. I was shocked. So there's 66 million people in the UK. Right?
Yeah.
And they give you the daily average of deaths from COVID. You ready? 6, 9, 11, 13, 33. Here's a spiker right here. Here's 81. So that means dividing that in the total population, it's 0.000001. 6 zeros in front. So as an overall, just for 66 million people to lose 80 people in one day to the COVID, would you consider that to be a national crisis?
Well, yeah, I don't know about what those numbers are. Is that from the entire 7 months? Because I thought UK had it worse than most every country in Europe.
October 10th, 66 million people live in the UK, 81 people died.
Okay, but that's 7 months into a pandemic. Yeah.
I mean, on the 7th of September, 7th of September, 3 people out of 66 million died.
Okay, but the problem is if it's gone all the way up from 3 to 81 in a matter of a month, because there are all these spikes, so it could be a concern. But yeah, it's your bottom line is, hey, that's a small percentage of people who die. But if that was at the bottom of the curve and now they're going up, people are talking about this as being the second and third wave, there still could be reason for concern. Okay. By the way, I want to give credit to Jacob.
Putting it all in perspective. Yes, yeah. For what? Jacob, for
getting finding two Christmas themed stories before Halloween. That is brilliant producing work.
It comes earlier every year, Tom.
It does. It's true. Good job, Jacob. Very funny. Tomorrow, I'm going to try to slip in my story about the 9-year-old ghost boy and why I saw the 9-year-old ghost boy. And it has sort of would you describe it as a sad ending to it or? It's a bittersweet tomorrow. So if people have ever heard from the 9-year-old ghost boy, we'll explain why he listens to the show, why he writes the show, and how he first appeared to me. But checking with Tracy Taylor, looking at traffic, what's going on? All righty, here we go. Letters have been pouring in saying, boy, does John Curley sound extra annoying today? Again, Sean, I'm leaving it up to you. Let me just say something about the mailman. Really nice guy, wrote this song like about 10 years ago at a mailman convention, brought the house down. Everybody loved him. Tom and I have met him. He's a great guy. Now, go ahead and play as much of his song that you want.
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's the amount of time.
I'm the mailman.
All right, there we go. Teeny Tiny Ladies shows in the letter of the day, Tom, and I know that we're going to get to that, but first let's take care of all the rest. Here we go.
Well, for some people, a couple people wrote to you, John.
I don't know why.
Area code 206. John Curley, you are a true friend.
Don't get that one. Matt in the 206 says, John, I know money has become tight due to economic lockdown, but can you please get a decent internet connection for your Unabomber shack? Get the studio and do your work. Okay, yes, thank you.
On the Satterberg stats, this is about the shootings in the King County. Area code 360. Since when is violence an emotion? No. Anger, fear, despair, those are emotions.
206 says, to Tom's question, COVID makes us better marksmen. Unknown side effect. Oh, my God.
That's funny. 360, shootings have gone up 15%, but hits have gone up 58%. True, because of COVID, more time off to practice and become a better shot, obviously.
Jeez, protest regulations. 609 says, burn stuff down is called arson and it's illegal. What the heck does prohibition is something illegal mean? Get your act together, King County, and arrest and imprison criminals.
And 206, sadly, if the Washington State Supreme Court ruled that the $30 car tab initiative had too many subjects, then the SBOG initiative is going to have way too many, according to our liberal judges.
And this is, I feel this way for Hannah, 206 says, why does Hannah, poor Hannah, get stuck covering so many crazy news days? Yeah.
And we're back to John in Clelum, area code 360. John, it's illegal to hunt with a 223 round.
Okay, that's good to know. That's why I'll never do it. All right, John. Matt. Okay, Matt again, 206. John, you don't hunt with a 223 as you'll be picking fragments out of the meat. It's not the power of the caliber. The 223 is designed to inflict maximum damage on humans and not make for clean hunting rifles. Reach out if you need a talking redneck. Okay.
That's terrible. You should not even ever use that. It's done to make
I think
most
that's the thing you
damage.
Shoot squirrels with. It's a little teeny tiny.
And now it is time for the letter.
Thank you,
Teeny
Tiny.
The letter of the day comes from area code 206. And again, it's addressed to John. John, I was going to tell you a sound joke, but I'm afraid it will hurt your ears.
Oh, my God. All right, hurts. I'm coming back tomorrow. My ears. All right, I'm doing the show in the studio tomorrow.
That's all she wrote.
That's all she wrote.
No, it's not. Let me try it again. Let's do another hour. I'll try to fix my microphone.
That's right. You always sound good in that six.
No, I don't.